Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, a single serving of it contains roughly twice as much bacteria as there are people on Earth.
It's so popular in India that its signature bacterium was declared the national microbe in 2012.
And John Harvey Kellogg, the man behind cornflakes, recommended consuming a pint a day, half orally and half via enema.
What's good about that?
It's yogurt! And welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, a chef and food writer, and I'm here with QI elves, Jack and Manu.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we, Rosie?
Raring to go. Fantastic. Ready to get my gut in the best shape of its life. And I just want to say, for me, yogurt is just such a really safe, comforting, nice thing. Like, it really is the platonic ideal of what it is. It's just a plain white substance. It's just very nice. It's very soft.
I think very few people would be offended by yogurt. I have it every morning.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you not get bored? Sorry.
I do, but I have never really enjoyed breakfast. I always see it as something to be skipped or like got out of the way as quickly as possible so that you can get ready for lunch.
That's the craziest shit you've ever said on this podcast.
Hot take.
So yogurt is fermented milk.
Ah, okay. How do you stop milk turning into cheese and turn it into yogurt?
Cheese, you properly cook to curdle and separate the curds and the whey. Whereas with yogurt, you're only getting it to a certain temperature, letting the bacteria do the curdling, as it were.
Right.
So it's not separating.
So basically two really important bacteria, Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus.
Thermophilus meaning liking heat.
I see. So is that the one that loves working and eating sugars at around 40 to 45 degrees?
Absolutely. And that's how you make yogurt, because you raise it to a high enough temperature that kills most of the bacteria. And then you leave it at 40 to 45 degrees Celsius with these two bedfellows, Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus. And that's actually the main difference between certain things like quark and kefir have bacteria that basically work at room temperature.
Oh, I see.
Whereas to make yogurt, you actually have to raise it slightly above body temperature to 40 to 45 degrees.
Cool.
Which is why it's called thermophilus, because it likes the heat.
There will get some whey when you strain it, but you're not truly separating it the way you do with cheese. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, also, that's why you get that kind of like watery film on your yogurt.
Yeah.
You leave it in the fridge and it starts basically like pissing out whey, and you just stir it back in.
Get away with words, Manny.
Yes. But in cheese production, that whey is gone. Like, that's a waste product, like we spoke on in the cheese episode. And one of the things I was really interested in is the thickness of yogurt. I love a Greek yogurt. I love really heavy,
buttery yogurts. Yeah.
Robust.
And there are two things that can influence the thickness. One is whether you strain it or not, which makes a lot of sense. So a lot of the yogurts we think of as Greek yogurts are literally strained. So you hang the yogurt in a mesh and all of that like liquidy whey falls out. But there's another way it can be thicker, and if the protein content is higher.
Because there's does that work?
More protein strands to make a mesh that kind of makes it more solid. So you have more of the kind of basically the building blocks that make a solid structure.
And that depends on the original milk, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, can you make yogurt out of different species?
Yes, you can.
Ooh.
You can also make yogurt out of things that aren't animal milks at all. So you'll use those same bacteria to make, say, oat milk or coconut milk. It's the same thing, and they can eat different sugars. They don't just have to
That's
eat lactose.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you know there's no such thing as yak yogurt?
Oh, what's that?
Because yaks are the male version of the... so you should say dry yogurt. D-R-I.
Oh, is that the
right. Possibly pronounced dree, but yeah.
What I did like is if you make yogurt from the Eastern Cottontail rabbit, it's going to be crazy high protein. It's one of the highest protein milks.
That's amazing.
So say like from cow, it's about 3.5% protein. Mm-hmm. Soy is pretty high, but the Eastern Cottontail rabbit is 15% protein raw milk. So the protein yogurt from that would be insane.
That may be the highest of the mammals that we've learned about. But did you know cockroaches make milk?
Oh,
and
no.
It's 40 to 45% protein. Oh. Yeah. So I'd love to try some cockroach yogurt.
I'm really not with you on that one. I really don't feel like doing that at all.
I suspect it's quite hard to harvest.
Because of this and the different protein contents of yogurt, I was like, okay, what form of dairy actually has the most protein? Parmesan is up there, man.
Really?
This is so high protein.
I've been saying this for years. I am a protein queen.
Greek yogurt in particular, like I said, because it's really thick, more protein. But where is Greek yogurt from?
Greece.
No.
Oh,
it's
fuck.
It's not Greece.
My understanding of Greek yogurt is that someone's called it Greek yogurt, but it's actually just... strange yogurt.
It is just strange.
Which is another legal requirement on packaging in this country is if your yogurt doesn't come from the country of Greece, but is strained, you have to call it Greek-style yogurt.
Mm. Interesting. I wondered why that was a choice that people had made.
It's actually from Turkey. So the person that popularized Greek yogurt in the US and made it really, really big all over the world. So he's a guy that founded Chobani, which is a really big yogurt
company. Huge yogurt brand. Everyone on TikTok eats Chobani.
Really? So his name is Hamdi Ulukaya. So he's Turkish. And apparently one of the reasons he did it was because there's a lot of Islamophobia in the US at the time.
So true.
But WASPy Americans love ancient Greeks because it's like,
birthplace of democracy.
And also
heritage.
The Greek system in all the universities, you know, like
fraternities and sororities.
And it did really well. And now it's like one of the most popular yogurts.
It is. I think Greek yogurt might be my yogurt of choice.
Really?
If I had to really, really think about it. But for eating by itself, not for use in cooking, which I shall... And not for enemas. What is with the days of yore and food enemas?
Does it count as a liquid or a solid?
Oh, it depends who you're asking and what mode of transport you're taking. So in the UK, yogurt counts as a liquid or gel for airport security. So you've still got that 100ml limit. But it's also, it can come really, really thick. So we're talking about Labneh, for example. That is a solid. So it's kind of like a semi-solid substance.
I call it a semi-solid, if anyone cares.
It's also thixotropic, which means that the more you irritate it, the more you... If you jiggle it around loads, it gets runny.
Yeah, I've noticed this.
You know, like when you shake a ketchup bottle,
right?
It gets runnier
in
that moment, but then it's not constantly...
As soon as you put it down, it gets thick again. From my Jesus C science, I think a liquid fills the shape of the container you put it in.
That's if true. A volcano erupted yogurt, would you run away from it?
No, you run towards the yogurt volcano.
It's molten yogurt.
Oh,
you
is it hot
you're going to get burned to a crisp.
I just assumed it would be cold and delicious.
No, it's not a fun volcano.
Shall we talk about where yogurt comes from and where the word comes from?
Ooh,
yes.
Because it's kind of hotly disputed. Certainly the word that we use, yogurt, comes from the Turkish word yogurmak.
Ooh,
which means to thicken, coagulate, or curdle, because that is what happens to the milk. Kind of, you know, Ron Seal does what it says on the tin. Mm-hmm.
And also Turkish yogurt, particularly good. There can't be that many Turkish words that have entered English lexicon, but cool that yogurt is one of them.
I reckon there are about 12. Kebab, there's one.
Kebab, yeah.
Sherbet, that's a food.
Sofa.
Interesting.
There's another one that's entered our language from Turkey.
That's cool.
And kiosk.
As in kiosk. Like a small news agents.
Yes.
Oh.
I love all of the variations that the Oxford English Dictionary accepts for yogurt, varying with geography and history, but there's yogurt, both with and without the H.
Ah, yes. For any Americans listening mm-hmm. who haven't been able to understand a word we've been saying.
Yogurt. There's yogurt with a D at the end.
Oh.
Yaourt, which is very similar to the French. Yaourt with a TH at the end. And then my favourite, which is yaourty. Yaourty. Y-I-A-O-U-R-T-I.
Yaourty.
Which is from 1939. And goodness. They all count as valid spellings of yogurt.
In English.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
That's really not at all close to how yogurt sounds.
No, it's really not. It's another we don't know who done it.
I know, yeah, there's a bit of an argument, because I read a Turkish source which was annoyed that they had decided to call the bacterium Lactobacillus bulgaricus
mm-hmm.
because it came from Bulgaria.
Oh, dear.
And apparently it didn't actually, but Bulgarians were the most famous. In fact, as soon as it came to Western Europe in the early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
it was known as Bulgarian buttermilk on occasion.
Yeah. Right. As you say, came to Western Europe, but it had existed in Eastern Europe
for a long time,
right?
The so Near East, yeah. It's amazing how many thousands of years passed before. In 1905, there were newspaper articles describing yogurt in inverted commas, and
mm-hmm.
it was like a newfangled thing to Westerners. But yeah, mm-hmm. it seems like the trade routes were there. We knew about cinnamon, for instance, for thousands of years, or rice, or, you know.
Yeah,
there are mentions of yogurt in like ancient Ayurvedic texts from India that are like 6,000 BCE, so really, really, really old.
Wow.
And we think yogurt emerged from Central Asia and the Middle East, kind of independently, so pockets of nomadic travellers, kind of in the same way that cheese might have been discovered. Basically, people travelling with dairy would have found
accidentally making yogurt.
Yeah, like legit. So the sacks they were carrying them in probably had all sorts of bacteria in them, and they found that their milk would start to kind of curdle and culture as they were moving along, and that this new milk product lasted a lot longer than fresh milk because microbes hate the acidic environment of yogurt, which is why it lasts so long.
Yeah.
Right. And it tastes different, you know, if you enjoy the funk. Uh-huh. That's kind of the enjoyment of fermentation.
I mean, I have to wonder, did all dairy taste a bit funky when there was no refrigeration? Yeah, surely it didn't taste.
No pasteurization.
No.
Yeah,
it's very plain these days, whereas I reckon it probably had a funk to it.
Mm-hmm. I did veganuary a couple of times, and every time I went back to cow's milk, I'd notice it was distinctly cowy because I'd spent some time dehabituating, I guess.
Interesting.
Might be the word.
I mean, there's a, you could say that yogurt has been constantly reinventing itself over the last 40, 50 years since it became like a mainstream household ingredient, right?
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in the last 3, 4, 5 years, where protein has become this huge talking point in cooking and in health, yogurt has just gone from strength to strength because of it.
Literally.
It coincidentally is really high in protein, and all the yogurt companies are like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's absolutely right. When it was launched in the West, like when it became really popular, it was still this amazing health food. Like that's never gone away.
But the idea was that it contained enough good bacteria that it would kill all the bad bacteria on your gut and make you live beyond 100.
Are we talking about the Bulgarian microbiologist and his work?
Yes, the student who's looked down a microscope and found the little wiggly things.
Yes. So Stamen Grigorov, a microbiologist who's working in the early 1900s, he was gifted some yogurt for his wedding. And as you do, it's a great gift. And then he was immediately like, I'm just going to look at it for ages under my microscope. And he stared at it for so long, he identified the bacteria, the main one we've been talking about, Lactobacillus bulgaricus, which is why it's called that. It's got the like Bulgaria in the name after his discovery. So he found it. And then yogurt making in Bulgaria became really, really popular. The government got involved at one point and they still have like a state-owned yogurt and bacteria company. It's mad.
Cool.
But then a few years later, there was a Russian biologist, a Nobel Prize winner called Eli Metchnikoff, who built on Stamen's findings. He was particularly interested in the way that Bulgarian peasants in the mountains who ate a lot of yogurt were living for a really, really long time. So this is kind of where the idea of it being like a kind of superfood, health food, longevity food begins. For me, it's stunk of the kind of blue zone studies. I know it's a much earlier thing. Blue zones basically being those areas in the world where people have specific diets and live longer, but it's kind of been debunked. And I looked into it, and today, Bulgarians, particularly in rural areas, actually have the lowest life expectancy in the EU.
Is that because all the yogurt-eating peasants of 1905 are currently 120 years old and all dropping dead?
Maybe.
So I found this article in The Telegraph from 1905, and it basically sort of reviewed the first yogurt for Western ears, Western tongues. It spells it with an A, so it's Y-A-G-H-U-R-T. And he finishes with, people who wish to live to 100 breakfast off yogurt exclusively. Your correspondent has tried it and personally would prefer to die young.
Oh,
what a slam!
So sad.
Today's very first lunchbox is my lunchbox, and you're all in for a treat because I've baked you a cake.
Oh, thank goodness.
This is a yogurt pot cake. Ooh. Are you familiar?
I've never heard of yogurt pot, no.
From what I can tell, this is a French creation.
Oh, yaourt.
Yeah, it's gâteau yaourt.
Okay, cool.
It's not a sexy word.
It's not
French,
a sexy.
Sorry.
It's very hard to say.
They do still love yogurt, the French.
They hella love yogurt, the French.
Yes, I always love going to foreign supermarkets and seeing what is like disproportionately large compared to the UK. Mm-hmm. And in France, it's the yogurt aisle is huge.
Totally. In the 1950s, post-war, you know, latent rationing feelings of not very much going on in the kitchens. As we've already spoken about, the French love yogurt and they love using it in various different things. And in the 50s, they started selling yogurt in little glass jars. Have you seen the little glass jars of yogurt?
No, I have indeed.
There is something... If you haven't eaten yogurt out of a French glass jar, then I recommend you do, because it's a different thing.
Is it like drinking Coke out of a glass bottle, but the yogurt version?
Kind of. It is, kind of. The sensation of a spoon on glass is just way more premium. Anyway, essentially, this is a really clever recipe. And what it is you empty your pot of yogurt.
Okay.
So this is 150 mils. Most French pots are actually 125. But in the UK... they tend to be around 150. You empty this into a bowl and then you use this pot as your measuring tool.
Clever.
You're not using any scales. You take one pot of yogurt, two pots of sugar, three eggs, which I did put into the pot. And guess what? It's a whole pot of eggs.
Wow.
Three pots of flour, one pot of oil. And then there's a couple of ingredients that you could measure into the pot, but you don't. A teaspoon of baking powder, a pinch of salt, and flavorings, which are, in this case, I actually just use vanilla, but lemon is quite a common flavoring as well.
Okay. Listener, do not put a pot of salt in your cake.
Oh, yes, good point.
Yeah, I
pinch
want to
of
reiterate.
Salt, not a pot of salt. This is the cake I would make if I went to an Airbnb and was like, I would really like to make a cake. Cool. What can I make? Oh, I'll make a yogurt pot cake.
Nice.
Perfect. It's a super easy, very basic recipe, and it makes what I would describe as a sort of pound cake. So a pound cake is a denser, thicker crumb cake than, you know, something that's very whipped with creamed butter and sugar, for example.
Nice.
Should we try a bit?
I'd love to, yeah.
Ooh, it's beautiful. Very delicate.
It's still really nice, actually, because it's very simple. Great for kids, getting kids to bake. We can do it from memory. Yogurt is actually a great ingredient to bake with. I really like baking with yogurt. It is something that will keep your bakes very moist. Have you noticed that this is, I would say, quite a moist, delicious cake?
Moist.
You know, it's not making my mouth pucker, as it were. There's lots of reasons why yogurt works like this. It doesn't have the highest fat content of all of the baking dairies that you might want to use.
Hence the cup of oil.
But it has some fat, and that always helps with tenderness. It's got lactic acid in it, which reacts really strongly with any leavening agent that you might be using, because they are typically alkaline. And lactic acid is, of course, acidic.
Yeah.
It creates this like very nice, airy, light rise. You know, I didn't, this is a one bowl cake. I did no whisking. I basically just brought it together with a whisk. I didn't have to apply any force at all, and it's risen lovely. I did lick the bowl quite a lot, though. It was very delicious. Nice. A little bit of batter there. It's just a very useful baking ingredient, particularly in cakes and muffins, but also in flatbreads. Have you ever made a yogurt flatbread?
Oh, no. Yes. I used to make naan with yogurt all the time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very useful for that. The acid will also weaken the gluten in the flour. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make them really sort of like springy and elastic when you cook them. They stay really fluffy. Yeah.
That's so clever.
Well, have you heard of clabber?
What's clabber?
Clabber is the southern USA sort of proto yogurt. So you let it curdle for a little bit. It's more similar to quark, which is the very good words, both of them. Uh-huh. And there's a famous brand to this day in America of baking soda called Clabber Girl.
Incredible.
Yeah, and because it was used in cakes as a leavening agent back in the day.
That's so smart.
But apparently you can't make clabber anymore because... Well, you can if you have a cow or a goat, but you can't use it with the supermarket milk because everything's pasteurized.
Could
you
call
to use unpasteurized?
If you went like to a late night science thing in a lab, you could call that clabbing, like clabbing.
And there is a tradition of making yogurt in the Balkans with ants. So apparently you drop a wood ant and it has to be alive. Uh-huh. And the formic acid and the distinct microbiome can curdle the milk.
Ooh. I knew when you said formic acid earlier, I was like, ant.
You start with milk, you heat it up and drop a couple of ants in it, specifically red wood ants.
How many would you need for that?
Just a couple per litre. Good. Once you've added your ants, you put some cheesecloth over it and then you bury it in the anthill with the cheesecloth, obviously to stop more ants and soil getting in. And the anthill stays warm so that overnight it creates a yogurt. And then you take it out.
Okay.
Imagine stealing, like if a human took your friend and put them in a giant thing of yogurt and that wasn't enough. The human then puts your dying friend back into your house.
Let this be a lesson to you.
Anyway, yogurt... In cooking generally, do you guys use yogurt much when you're cooking? Like as an ingredient, less so as a...
Like a sauce or a...
Yeah, like a topping. I love it as a topping, obviously, to be clear. It's a fantastic topping.
No, I rarely mix it into things.
Why is that, do you think?
I have it every day for fucking breakfast. That's why. I'm sick of it.
That's your problem.
I mean, now I'm thinking about it. In my head, it's the idea of creaminess, but there's not actually that much fat in it.
No. When you're trying to finish a sauce with something creamy and make it creamier or cook something creamy, it's not the one to choose unless you take some steps to avoid it from curdling.
Sorry, you said curdling already. Isn't it already curdled? You mean curdling more?
Well, is it? That's the question, because we sort of came to the point that it's
like coagulated. It's
coagulated.
Kind of like when you get a nosebleed and the blood becomes kind of gelatinous and like sticky and more gel-like.
Yeah. Well, this is actually something I wanted to talk about, is the difference between curdling and splitting. Because I think people use those words interchangeably, but they are not the same thing. So curdling specifically refers to proteins coagulating, as you said, and clumping together. Mm-hmm. And in yogurt, these are casein proteins. So that's that dairy protein. While splitting is a broader term from the separation of a fat from a liquid compound. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, it's like fat and water, like egg and butter.
It's the opposite of emulsifying.
It's the opposite. Yeah. It's the breaking of an emulsification.
De-emulsification.
So, so when you put a dairy into a sauce, a hot cooked sauce, and it does curdle, and so you get that white granular texture, that's not split, that's curdle.
And that's irreversible, I imagine.
It is unfortunately irreversible. You can prevent it. So you can add a starch. That's the most common fail-safe way. So whether that's cornstarch, whether that's plain flour. Obviously, the issue with adding starch to things is it kind of changes the texture in a, you know, makes it a lot thicker. It can also absorb a lot of your flavor. So you might feel like you've made it a bit less delicious. Just bringing yogurt to temperature, making sure it's room temperature before you add it to anything hot is a really good, easy thing to do. But also making sure that the thing you're adding it to is not physically boiling.
Scalding hot.
Like, it shouldn't be on the heat and it shouldn't be even close to bubbling. Yeah. It should have completely settled.
Yeah, my dad always made that mistake. He'd mix yogurt into his curries and it would always split and coagulate.
Yeah, so in an Indian restaurant, they will temper the yogurt as well. So what they'll do, a bit like how we've discussed tempering eggs and kind of tempering chocolate, you add something hot to your slightly colder thing and just mix it in. So in this case, you take a bit of your sauce or your curry, put it in the yogurt, whisk it in so it is not as shocked when it goes into that hot liquid, and then it will settle in a lot better.
Smart. I'm imagining yogurt as like a very princessy ingredient.
But it's so delicious. I mean, I think obviously the other thing to remember is just if you don't want something to curdle, don't use a low fat product. So unfortunately, guys, the health conscious out there, it isn't the solution for cooking. Because I think everyone, sometimes I can't even find full fat creme fraiche. Really? Sometimes it's only half fat. And I'm like, who's cooking with this shit? It's terrible to cook with. But anyway, the tricks are make sure it's room temperature. Mm-hmm. Make sure your thing isn't boiling hot. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're using a nice high fat yogurt and give it a little temper. You should be in a better place.
Great. Nice. Speaking of yogurt and heat, did you read about the researcher at Loughborough University last year? It was called Ben Roberts, and he conducted an experiment where he smeared Greek yogurt all over the outside of his house.
Oh, what?
What was the experiment for?
Specifically the house's windows, and then he measured what would happen to the temperature inside. And it was part of a thing called the heatwave toolkit. So it's trying to find it simple, easy.
That is an expensive insulation.
Well, it's potentially cheaper than, you know, a pot of yogurt's only as much as a coffee, right?
But did it work?
Yes. Yeah, so his experiment was with two houses, one smeared in yogurt and the other left as is. Au naturel. So apparently, on an average day, the yogurt house was about 0.6 degrees Celsius
the
cooler.
The yogurt house.
Which isn't much. But on a hot, sunny day, i.e. the days that you actually want to be kept cool, the difference was 3.5 degrees Celsius.
Ooh,
so talking
that's actually
like 25 degrees as opposed to 21.5. And the reason it works is kind of the same as why ice on the poles keeps the earth cool. One of the ways it keeps the earth cool is because it reflects the heat. So because yogurt is white, when it dries out, it forms a thin film, which reflects some of the solar radiation back before it can pass through the window.
Well, if I get desperate this summer for a bit of air conditioning, I shall be taking myself to get some fire. Okay, time to dive into our second lunchbox, and that's Jack's lunchbox.
So today I've brought in Azerbaijani wedding soup.
Yummy!
Made from yogurt.
Oh, that is a thick soup.
It's very thick.
I would like to say I think this might be our first Azerbaijani dish.
Well, it's called dovga. Served between meals as a digestive aid, because I wanted to talk a bit about how yogurt is so healthy, or is it a bit overrated? We'll find out.
Can you talk to me about what's in it? It looks like it kind of looks like herby rice pudding.
May I stir it a little?
You may.
Thank you.
Ooh. And you can also help yourself to some, because it hasn't had any salt added, because apparently that will make the yogurt split. So you season it just before serving.
It smells minty.
So this is basically yogurt mixed with flour, rice and eggs, and then boiled. And then you add lots of chopped herbs to it. So this one has coriander, mint and dill.
It's and not bad.
You can add chickpeas to it as well.
With a bit of salt.
It's refreshing.
But Azerbaijan is another one of those places that kind of claims yogurt as its own.
I see.
Same with Armenia and Georgia, although yogurt for longevity, that's how it kind of arrived on our shores in 1905. The world's oldest person in 2025, Maria Branias Moreira, she died actually at the end of 2025. She was 117.
Whoa.
And of course, everybody wanted to know her secret. That's how these things work. I always said if I got to that age, I'd make up some random facts like, oh, what's your secret? Oh, I ate a pine cone every day or something, you know. But much was made of the admission that she ate yogurt thrice a day.
Wow.
Thrice.
That's a whole...
So scientists did learn that she had remarkably good gut health. I don't know how they learned that. Maybe poo samples. But she also, like, didn't smoke, didn't drink, had a, like, healthy relationship with family and friends and ate a Mediterranean diet. So there are lots of factors. But yogurt has been shown to reduce obesity if you eat it regularly. And they did a study in MIT in 2011, which was trying to show the link with obesity in rats.
MIT being...
Oh, MIT, the Massachusetts Institute for Technology.
Ah, yes.
But the side effect of giving the rats yogurt-rich diet is that the males had larger testicles.
Oh no.
5%,
good or bad?
5% bigger testicles than the non-yogurt but still healthy diet, and 15% bigger than the junk food diet.
But to clarify, is bigger testicle better or worse?
Well, I don't know. It's a matter of preference.
Yeah, depends.
But does it have more sperm in it?
Well, they certainly found that they were more attractive to the female mice, which gave them a sort of sexual swagger, was the phrase they used in the study.
I don't. I think there's nothing I want to meet less than a rat, a rat with sexual swagger.
Their fur was noticeably shinier as well.
Great. So perfect.
So other things, it can help ward off garlic breath.
It's supposed to be good for garlic breath.
Yeah. Again, a different study has shown that it reduced 99% of the most odor-producing volatile chemicals. But you have to eat it straight away, or at least as soon as you can. Higher fat is more effective. So the fat and the protein molecules are just in the perfect balance that they attach to all the smelly garlicky chemicals.
So cool.
It can also prevent loneliness. In Japan, 30% of the population are over 65. It's one of the fastest aging societies in the world. And there are these things called Yakult ladies. Sorry, these people called Yakult ladies who come and deliver Yakult, basically, to people who sign up for a delivery system. And they're specifically trained, in a way, to provide comfort and support to lonely people, old people especially, who live on their own. And they look a bit like flight attendants. They're very sort of neatly dressed with a button-up
shirt.
Really
good colour scheme as well, the Yakult. Yeah, yeah. It's very classy.
And it's mostly ladies because Yakult was invented in the 30s. And during the war, there was a labour shortage, so there were a lot of men in the factories and the women had to step up. And they also were more able to talk to the housewives because back in the day, I think the idea of probiotic and prebiotic was not really familiar. So people were a bit icked out by the thought of drinking bacteria, which is basically the whole selling point of Yakult.
We've also not described the difference between pro and prebiotic.
Yet. Oh, do you know the difference?
Yeah, so probiotic is adding more happy bacteria into your gut, and prebiotic is creating the environment in which they will thrive, like eating a lot of fiber. Prebiotic, fiber, probiotic, yogurt.
So prebiotic is like cleaning your house in preparation for a party. And then probiotic is like
having really cool guests.
Sending all the invites out, yeah.
I've got a couple of other cool uses
for
yogurt. So one is in singing.
Oh, yeah.
So the French the French have a term which is chanter en yaourt, which is literally to sing in yogurt.
Sing in yogurt.
And this is a term they use for when you're singing a song in a language that maybe you don't know and you kind of know the words, but you don't know what you're saying.
That's
so you
kind
of end up making like loads of really weird noises.
The best example of that song is that song, Blaisha, Blaisha, Noma, 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 Noma.
Yeah, that's it. Dragostea Dinte. Ozone released it in 2003. Not Noma, Noma, which everyone thinks it's called.
Noma, Noma, yeah. Okay, we should move on to our final lunchbox, I think, and that's from Manu.
Today, I have brought a wooden spoon with which you can attempt to make vagina yogurt.
No! Oh,
you never ever bring anything
so
good.
Conceptual. At least you're keeping the budget low.
I know.
To be fair, it is, you know, if you took the spoon end away, it is giving smear tests.
Oh, it really, damn it, is.
That's a wooden speculum.
So today I wanted to talk about the story of Cecilia Westbrook, who wanted to answer the question, can you make yogurt with your vagina bacteria?
A question I've often asked myself.
It's a big one. She went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she was learning about different bacterias and culturing yogurt and all of the kind of health benefits that come with it. And she learned that the dominant bacteria in vaginal fluid is a lactobacillus bacteria. It's not the exact same one that's made to use our everyday yogurt, but it is very similar. So she decided to put a wooden spoon up her hoo-ha, collect some of her vaginal fluids and put it in some milk. and then keep the milk nice and warm. She put it to bed. And then the next day she woke up and she had yogurt.
Oh, so it works.
Her friend wrote quite a lot about her experiment. And according to her friend, Cecilia ate the yogurt and it tasted quite sour and tangy and tingly. And she ate it with blueberries.
Oh, in a way, I'm humbly proud of what the female body can do.
Yeah, well, exactly. There's a big catch. A few months later, a Dutch microbiologist called Roseanne Hertzberger heard about Cecilia's experiment and she was like, this is a bit fishy.
you said it.
So she decided to replicate it in a lab setting. Okay. And she took vaginal swabs from lots of different pregnant women.
A lab essay.
Why pregnant?
I'm not sure. It's just maybe it's the women she had at the time that she was doing tests on. But she...
Poor pregnant women. Gone.
I mean, to be fair, they're never involved in experiments.
No, they aren't.
So just... For the win.
Yeah, for the win.
Anyway, so she took vaginal swabs from these women and did the same process, tried to culture the milk, and none of them worked. Mm-hmm. At best, it made like really grainy, sour milk that wasn't yogurt, nothing like we'd recognize today. And what Roseanne thinks is that it was actually cultures on the spoon or maybe in the air or like some dirt had got in from under her fingernails that managed to culture this yogurt if it was cultured at all.
Interesting.
Did you find anything about breast milk yogurt?
I haven't, but you must be able to culture breast.
Yeah.
I think you must be able to.
Would you try
But would you culture your breast milk yogurt with your vaginal bacteria?
Oh my God.
That is an entirely human yogurt.
Wow.
I feel like this is showing you couldn't culture it properly, but I can try if you want.
You never know. It might work with breast milk. That might be the secret sauce.
I mean, you're breastfeeding at the moment.
I'm not going to sacrifice my breast milk to this weird experience.
For science.
Would you try your own?
I think I probably would. You know?
Would, yeah.
I think I would. If it was just mine and no one else's, thank you.
If it's like a nice thick Greek yogurt, yes. If it's like a
from a Greek
thin,
vagina.
Yeah, like a thin, and it obviously was my own.
Yeah.
But it would need to look tasty.
Well, that's on you, actually. So.
So I really wanted to talk a little bit about yogurt and gender.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is a very gendered food in this country and in the West. It is super feminine.
Yes.
And there is a Turkish historian, she is called Perin Gürel, who looked at how yogurt became a feminine food in the West. And it actually has a lot to do with race as well, which is really interesting.
Oh.
Because when it first came over, it was quite exotic.
Yeah.
And especially in America, there was a lot of effort put into making it an everyday, like all white American, basically bringing it back to milk rather than something like other and yogurt and sour. But also with this idea of healthiness and yogurt comes the idea of slimming and controlling the body.
Oh, yeah.
And that is unfortunately very connected to femininity and slimness.
Yeah.
And it kind of turned into like a healthy indulgence food. So it's kind of like you can have a little glass of wine at night, you can have a little yogurt in the day, and that's your treat. But this is not the case across the world. So in Turkey, where Gürel is from, it's actually, if anything, more masculine. Right. And it's marketed towards families. It's like a fortifying, especially in Ramadan.
They
marketed it a lot.
I definitely get that sense from Ayran, the Turkish salted yogurt drink. Mm-hmm. The branding is really masculine. It's very different to how you see a lot of like British yogurt brands do stuff here.
Danone actually marketed yogurt for men, for Bulgarian men.
Like the Yorkie of yogurts.
Exactly. And all of the packaging was like black and white. It was mad.
Classic.
And
did it have a steak on it?
No, it had very little.
Fast car.
It's big boobs. And then in 2012, a US entrepreneur called Carlos Ramirez released something that was literally just called Powerful Yogurt, which was also for men. And it was supposed to have a slightly higher protein content, but I think it was like 1% higher than Greek yogurt. But it's so interesting.
That is interesting, yeah.
And it really makes you think of Ichiban, lipstick for men. That's
that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
We'll leave you with the world record for the longest functioning tin can telephone, set in 2022 by a British man called John Hems. The string was 373.74 metres long, but he didn't use tin cans at either end. He used yoghurt pots.
Hey!
See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Onrio, and me, Rosie McKean. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.